Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Oh, we got a lot to get into. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in 15 minutes, we'll be joined by Kyle Glazer. He works at Baseball America. Chris Bubich is making his major league debut for the Kansas City Royals. We'll talk to someone who has scouted him, Kyle Glazer of Baseball America, coming up in just a little bit. Really quickly, before we get to some breaking news, if you watched the NBA yesterday, some of the players are wearing like social justice phrases on the back of their jerseys, like Black Lives Matter and equality and all of those things. Hassan Whiteside, who plays for the Portland Trailblazers, he has how many more on his jersey, yet more is spelled M-O-A-R. How many more is on his jersey? I am as down for everything the NBA is doing as anybody else. I'm not wearing liberation on the back of my jersey, though. Like, of all the phrases out there that I saw, I'm not wearing the one that says liberation.
It's weird that they gave them – how many different choices did the players
have? It's like
20-something. Yeah, 20-something, and I feel like we only saw 8 of them last night. Maybe there are a bunch more, but I feel like of all the different phrases that they had, yeah, the liberation one was like, oh, okay, all right.
I was really laughing that Joe Ingles for the Utah Jazz –
was he the ally?
He was wearing ally. Like, yeah, he was wearing ally in the back of his jersey. I was dying laughing at that. We have some breaking news in Major League Baseball from Jeff Passan of ESPN. Breaking in all caps. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred told MLB Players Association Executive Director Tony Clark on Friday that if the sport doesn't do a better job of managing the coronavirus, it could shut down for the season, sources tell ESPN. It then goes on to say, this weekend is seen as a critical juncture for the sport, both in terms of hoping for a limit of positive tests and in players abiding by protocols. Local health officials have been troubled by the lack of mask wearing, high five, and spitting by players, according to sources. From a PR standpoint, baseball has had an absolutely dreadful summer. You would certainly think that both sides are going to do everything in their power to try to keep this thing going. But what has happened in the sport in the first 8 days has to serve as some sort of wake-up call for everybody. If this entire thing was about the money and it wasn't about crowning a true champion and it was about, we all understand that we're getting kicked in the teeth money-wise financially because of the virus. So let's try to play these games and let's try to make as much money as we possibly can. They are in danger of messing the money up by week two of the baseball season, and there's 8 weeks in the season. It ain't like this is the end of September that it's just like, all right, hey, we just got to hold on for a little bit longer. Let's at least try to get a regular season done. We haven't even got to August yet, and they're already talking about shutting down the season. And not they meeting media people. I'm talking about they meeting the commissioner of baseball and the executive director for the Players Association.
It's pretty impressive how quickly they've screwed it up. We knew that baseball was going to face some hurdles, some bumps and bruises. I don't think a lot of us figured that a week into it, the Marlins would be asked to go away for a while and that 20% of tonight's games would have already been canceled. You're talking about September. Like, once the season, once we get a month and a half, 2 months into it, right before the playoffs, do we think it's going to get better or do we think it's going to get worse? And I'm not Nostradamus, Miss Cleo, or a doctor, but something tells me it's going to get worse. And it also feels like baseball, Carrington, they're just not handling it right. Like, this whole thing feels immature. Even this breaking news that you just read, where Rob Manfred says to Tony Clark, kind of passes it down, that if you guys don't act better, I'll pull this car right over. Like, my dad told me one time. So I didn't used to make my bed when I was a kid. And my dad threatened me. He goes, if you don't make your bed, right, if you don't make your sheets like you're supposed to, you're old enough. If you don't do it, I'm just going to take the sheets off the bed. And I called his bluff. I'm like, he wouldn't do that. He wouldn't make me sleep with no sheets and no blanket. And he did. In the middle of wintertime, That's what it feels like is going on right now with baseball, where their dad is threatening them, if you don't make your bet, I'm just going to take the sheets off.
Well, to be fair, Jeff Passan just put this out there literally in the middle of you were talking. The conversation between Manfred and Clark was not a threat, but a reality check that was relayed to the players and has spread quickly among them. We, all of us, need to clean this up, because if we don't, Major League Baseball in 2020 is going to be over. I mean, that part I do think is very real here. Man, one team has already had 19 players test positive in a week. And you've been saying this whole time, what's stopping that from being two teams of doing it? What's stopping that from being four teams to do it? That if you get to that point from a PR standpoint, I just don't think it's a good look for baseball to continue to do it. So I wasn't part of that conversation. I certainly trust the reporting of Jeff Passan. I don't think it's a threat. Everything about Major League Baseball has been about the virus. Think about it. This season, we're supposed to be talking about the playoff race and how the Royals are 2.5 games back or a game back and how excited we are for opening day. Man, the biggest conversation in sports, not just, think about it, the two, I would say, biggest sports conversations this summer, aside from NFL free agency, have been Major League Baseball between the players and owners disagreeing and taking 4 weeks to come to an agreement. And now, once they started playing baseball, you already have an outbreak within the sport. Like, when was the last good PR story from baseball? It's been a long time since that happened. And if this virus continues to, let's call it what it is, run rampant in the sport, I just don't know how you can continue.
How do you clean up, though? I mean, I hear what they're saying, but how do you clean up? Because masks are mandatory. These guys get tested every single day.
Haven't been getting tested every day. They've been getting tested every other day.
Every other day. So it's not like there's just absolutely willy-nilly no testing going on. But I get back to my original point, which is there's not a bubble. So when you travel, when you've got dugouts, when you've got bullpens, when you've got a sport where the catcher lines up a foot and a half behind the batter, I hate to tell people this, that's not social distancing. So I don't know if baseball is going to pull it off. I look at all these other sports, and I can say that basketball is going to make this work. We're going to have a champion in basketball, by and large, because of the bubble. It appears the Rob, what's the MLS down to now? Four teams?
They're still in their quarterfinals. They've played 45 or 46, the 51 matches they had lined up. So they're going to finish.
I think after Sporting went down last night, there's maybe six teams left. So they're going to get that accomplished. The NHL hasn't had a positive test for weeks. They're going to get that pulled off. And then baseball in the first week has had the Marlins go away. A bunch of guys get tested positive. Half the Royals starting rotation didn't start with the team. I don't know if this is going to happen for baseball, man.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll be joined by Kyle Glazer of Baseball America to get a scouting report on Chris Bubich, who makes his major league debut today at home for the Kansas City Royals. I want to read a quote to you guys really quickly. This is Lamar Jackson. Quote, "There's no quit with him. That's the type of guy that we need in this locker room. I feel our locker room is different than other locker rooms around the league. There's a brotherhood going on. None of that outside noise. Everything is strictly inside." What player do you think Lamar Jackson's talking about? Do you think he's talking about Mark Ingram, maybe Hollywood Brown, maybe Earl Thomas? Maybe that's who he's talking about. He's talking about Antonio Brown. There's no quit in him. Out of the last two football games that Antonio Brown has been eligible to play for, he quit in one of those games. Then he says there's a brotherhood going on. None of that outside noise. We keep everything strictly inside. You know what Antonio Brown is? He is the definition of outside noise. Strictly inside. You can't be more outside than recording conversations that you have privately with somebody else and making a YouTube video about it. Antonio Brown goes against everything that this paragraph from Lamar Jackson represents, which can make me only think one thing. The Ravens don't think they have enough to beat Kansas City. Like, what Lamar Jackson just said is so far away from actual fact and reality. It is one of the most delusional paragraphs I've ever heard in my entire life. You can only believe that if you don't feel you have enough to beat Kansas City. We don't have any outside noise. We keep everything strictly inside. There's no quitting Antonio Brown. What are you talking about?
Well, they do have Hollywood Brown, which is the cousin of Antonio Brown. And yesterday, Lamar Jackson vowed for Antonio Brown. The way that I see it, it's if Antonio Brown is still the same wide receiver, I'm talking about just on the football field. If he's the same wide receiver that he was the last time he played a full season, which is a mouthful because that's been like 20 games ago, well, then he's one of the best wide receivers in the league, and quite frankly, he makes the Ravens a better team, and he makes the Ravens a closer team to the Chiefs. The problem is, there's a lot more to Antonio Brown than just on the football field. Ask the Raiders. Ask the Patriots. Ask the Steelers. So I don't know if the Ravens, a team that went 14-2 last year and seemingly has a pretty good culture and locker room, wants to welcome that individual into it. Not because of anything he does on the football field. When he's on the field, he's great. The problem is everything else.
I'm just saying is you can big somebody up without lying. Like, you can call Tiger Woods a great golfer without calling him a devoted husband. Saying that none of that outside noise and there's no quitting Antonio Brown, we know that's not true with Antonio Brown. Now, if your stance is, hey, we know he's had problems, but if he comes into this locker room, we have a culture that we think we can keep him in line. Okay, the Patriots couldn't do that. I don't care what locker room culture you have. I don't care if you're Kansas City, Seattle, Baltimore. You do not have a better one than New England. You might have an equal one. You do not have a better one. They couldn't make it work for two games in New England. What do you guys have in place that Tom Brady and Bill Belichick didn't have in place? You don't have the championships that they have. You don't have the voice around the league that they have. What do you have in place that New England couldn't do? Because they couldn't get two games out of AB when they tried.
That's the problem is I don't think he works in a good locker room or a bad locker room. I think it's one of those in-between teams. Like New England, one of the best, if not the best locker room, like you said, didn't work. Pittsburgh, maybe the second best and most stable organization, didn't work. Okay, let's see how he does with a bad organization. The Raiders, didn't work. Lasted about a cup of coffee. I think it's going to take a middle-of-the-road team that thinks that he's the missing piece. You got a team like, I'm just throwing this out there, the Indianapolis Colts or the Los Angeles Chargers are a team that's predicted to go 500 that thinks that they need one missing piece. If I'm a good team like the Ravens and went 14-2 as the number one seed, I'm not touching Antonio Brown with a 40-foot pole.
Coming up next, we'll talk some baseball with Kyle Glazer of Baseball America. He is a scout. Let's get the latest on Brady Singer, who has had two great starts with the Royals, and Chris Bubich, who makes his major league debut tonight at Kauffman Stadium. That's coming up. Don't turn the dials to Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive. Thank you so much for listening on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. You can always interact with the show, 913-576-7610. The big story right now in sports is courtesy of Jeff Passan of ESPN. There was a conversation had between Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred and Tony Clark, who runs the Major League Baseball Players Association. And according to the story of ESPN, multiple players were briefed on the call and fear that the season could be shut down as soon as Monday if positive tests jump or if players continue to not strictly abide by the league's protocols. Let's go to the phone lines right now and be joined by our next guest. His name is Kyle Glazer. He works for Baseball America to get us the latest on this and also some scouting reports on some of the Royals' key young prospects. Kyle, appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's certainly been crazy times, and the news keeps coming hard and fast.
It absolutely is. Let's just start with that because everybody's talking about it in the sport. What do you make of the last 72 to 96 hours for baseball where it has just been all bad news regarding the virus?
Well, we knew this was going to be an ever-evolving fluid situation from the get-go. Anyone thinking that there wasn't going to be issues throughout this was fooling themselves. But obviously, this has happened a lot faster than a lot of people anticipated, having an outbreak within the Marlins clubhouse within the first 5 days of the season. Now we've seen it spread to the Central Division with the Cardinals and the Brewers. There's a lot of people right now scrambling and trying to figure out the best way to move forward. And look, I mean, it all comes down to testing. That's always been true of the season, whether or not they could pull it off or not. And when you have a certain number of positive tests, or if Major League Baseball feels like it can't get a handle on them, that's when things start to look dicey.
Kyle, what is your confidence that this gets turned around? Because, I mean, we're 8 days into the baseball season, and it has been absolutely terrible PR and optics for the league. What's your confidence that baseball can sort of turn this thing around?
To be honest, I don't think anyone can state definitively any level of confidence. You know, there's been so many things with the way this virus outbreak has taken place in the country beyond baseball. People stood up and made bold predictions early on that turned out to be false. I don't think you can state definitively, and that's something where it's uncomfortable for a lot of people not knowing. But to be honest, baseball and the world at whole has been on the defensive with this, and at this point, that's all they really can be, because you can't confidently predict anything with this. There's still so much we don't know.
Right now, we're talking to Kyle Glazer of Baseball America. Kyle, let's talk about some of the Royals' young players and prospects. Let's start with Brady Singer. What did you guys see from him at Baseball America to make him one of the top projects and prospects? And how impressed have you been with his first two starts in this early season?
Sure. So our college writers have really been following Brady since he was a standout at Florida. And he's also a high draft pick out of high school as well. He's a guy who's always performed well in big game situations, has a good fastball, has a nasty slider, just always been a big game type of pitcher who's performed everywhere he's been. You know, at various points, people have had questions about him, but you look up at the end of the day, and more often than not, he's leading his team to a victory. And we saw that with him. I mean, to get to the majors 2 years after he was drafted and really not even having a 2020 season, he only had one full minor league season and forced his way to the majors. Very on par with him. He's a really good pitcher who, with a long track record of success, the first two starts have looked good. There's always going to be an adjustment period, and he still is probably going to have to figure out a third pitch, a changeup to help him against lefties. But he's a good pitcher, and given his track record, you feel confident betting on him.
The Royals, it seems like, have spent their first-round draft pick, or at least high draft picks, for several years now on pitching. Obviously, the cupboard is completely stocked there. Are there a lot of organizations right now at the minor league level that have better young arms on the horizon than the Kansas City Royals?
There's not many. I mean, you look at the Padres, you look at the Dodgers, you look at the Braves. They all have similarly excellent pitching prospects. So the Royals aren't on a level all their own. But, you know, really it wasn't even that they spent multiple drafts on pitchers. It really that 2018 draft alone, they selected four pitchers at the top of the draft, and those four have all moved very quickly and looked really good. That's Brady Singer, Jackson Coar, Daniel Lynch, and Chris Bubich, who was called up and is going to make his first career start tonight.
Which of those guys, in your opinion, has the highest upside? Because we've seen Brady Singer out the gates be great, but if we're talking about 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now, which one of those names are we still going to be talking about?
Yeah, Daniel Lynch, the lefty, has been super, super impressive since the Royals drafted him out of Virginia. I mean, what's been nice is you were able to see Lynch, Singer, and Coar all pitching in the same rotation. Singer's the guy that, you know, is the most polished, the most proven. Lynch has had some injury issues. But when you look at the stuff, I mean, it's wicked stuff from the left side. We're talking 97 miles an hour with some really good breaking stuff. He looks the part. Just a matter of his development, staying healthy. But that's the guy, if everything clicks, you know, figures to be the front of the rotation type out of that quartet.
You bring up development, Kyle. You bring up healthy. Those two words describe Adalberto Mondesi to a T. As Royals fans, we've now seen him for parts of 5 or 6 different seasons. What are your expectations for him, not just this year, but as his major league career goes along?
Yeah, so you have to remember, he debuted very, very, very young. He was 20 years old when he made his debut there at the end of the 2015 season. As a general rule, never give up on guys who are in the majors but still under 25. There's a long history of guys who, you know, struggle at 22, 23. He had one good season, or one good half season, I should say, back in 2018. He has not been able to replicate that. I wouldn't give up on him. There's skills there. There's a lot more polish that needs to come. You know, just stick with it because, again, giving up on talented guys who are under 25 in the majors very often doesn't work out well.
Right now, we're talking to Kyle Glazer of Baseball America for a couple of more minutes. Kyle, give us a scouting report on Chris Bubich, who is making his major league debut today for the Kansas City Royals.
Yeah, so when the Royals drafted him out of Stanford, he's kind of that crafty back-end lefty who, you know, didn't blow you away with velocity, but he threw hard enough. He had good secondary pitches, still with the strike zone. You know, the classic guy you see as a number four for a starter. Well, his fastball velocity ticked up quite a bit his first full season. Last year, he was running his fastball up to 94 with heavy sink. So you have a guy that already really knew how to pitch, mix his pitches, hit his spots, change eye levels, all the things that make someone a really good pitcher beyond just their stuff. Then he added stuff on top of it. He led the minor leagues in strikeouts last year with 185, made the Futures game. And the other thing with him that's really eye-opening here is he finished last year at high Class A. The Royals are bringing this guy up from A-ball straight to the majors. That tells you how highly they think of him.
When you watch him, what kind of ceiling do you see for him, and what kind of major league comparison do you think he kind of fits into?
Yes, I'm going to stay away from major league comparisons for now just because I think that's not fair. I think you want to let every kid just be, you know, the best he can be. But Yeah, I mean, for a long time, again, there was a thought maybe he's that number five, you know, lefty starter that every team has. But, you know, there's been some sense that, he might be able to be a little more than that. Maybe it's a number four, possibly a number three if the velocity keeps ticking up. There's a lot of teams out there that would love to be able to call up a guy like a Chris Bubich. And the fact that he's kind of fourth in that pecking order of world pitching prospects I talked about, plus you add in first-round pick Asa Lacy. I mean, when this guy's your fifth best pitching prospect, you're in really, really good shape.
Last question here, Kyle. We appreciate your time. Everyone in Kansas City is really excited about Bobby Witt Jr. I think he played better than people expected him to play as the Royals were getting ready for the season. How do you guys evaluate and rate him as a prospect?
Yeah, so, I mean, the guys who have done the Royal system for us, and Carlos Collazo, our draft expert, think he's a generational, you know, type of talent potential in Kansas City. We had him as the top high school player in his class last year, and one of the top high school players to come out of the draft in the last couple of years. He has a chance to be a face of the franchise superstar type. He has the bloodlines. He has the athleticism. There's still some development left, but you're right. He looked pretty polished during summer camp, which is impressive for a guy that was in high school a year ago. Ultimately, it's just going to come down to how well he continues to grow and develop as a hitter. There's been some swing and miss concerns, but he's an incredible athlete. He can run. He's got power. And he's a great, great person. He's got a chance to be the face of the Royals franchise when we look up 3-4 years down the road from now.
That's Kyle Glazer of Baseball America giving us the scouting report on some of the key Royals prospects and Chris Bubich, who makes his major league debut in Kansas City today. Kyle, good talking to you, man. Really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, anytime.
That's Kyle Glazer of Baseball America. Let's talk some Royals baseball coming up in just a little bit. And we'll continue to talk about the Tom story. According to Jeff Passan of ESPN, Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, says that the league could shut down as early as Monday if they don't get a handle on the virus. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. The top story in sports today is Major League Baseball, a story from Jeff Passan of ESPN, who has been all over this more than any other baseball reporter in the game. Rob Manfred warns of a shutdown if the coronavirus isn't managed better. I want to read to you these two paragraphs. I always say you shouldn't read on the radio, but you need to hear these. So Rob Manfred says, should another outbreak materialize, Manfred has the power to shut the season down, and it could possibly move in that direction. So there was a call between the players and Rob Manfred and Tony Clark, who runs the Major League Baseball Players Association. Multiple players briefed on the call fear that the season could be shut down as soon as Monday if positive tests continue to spike or if the players continue to not strictly abide by the league's protocols. State and local governments have been pressuring baseball about players skirting the mandates outlined in the league's 113-page operation manual, sources tell ESPN. Broadcasts that have shown players not wearing masks, high-fiving, spitting, have left government officials wondering how seriously the players are taking the protocol. Further, there is concern about the off-the-field choices, with one high-ranking official saying, quote, there are some bad decisions being made. So the finger pointing on why it's not working right now in baseball certainly has started on if it's the players or the owners doing this. I'll say this. I'm a big believer that our legacy is typically defined in our biggest moments and mostly in our moments of adverse situations. Rob Manfred, I would say, very poorly handled the cheating scandal with the Houston Astros and gets criticized for it basically every single day. He mismanaged the negotiations between the players and the owners when it came to trying to start the season. Eventually, he had to just say, hey, we got to play baseball here. This is the plan. And now, a week into the plan, he has to threaten the players with, hey, we're going to take baseball away if you guys don't listen. If this plan doesn't work, Rob Manfred should be fired. And I know you can't blame one individual on this entire thing, and I know that the virus is bigger than Rob Manfred, but he hasn't handled in the last 12 months any major crisis that baseball has had to deal with. Everybody can deal with the good parts of it. Everybody can help market the game. Everybody can help come up with ideas like the extra innings rule or the doubleheader rule. They've been doing those things in softball for decades. You are the commissioner because of your ability to problem solve. And every problem that they've had in Major League Baseball, he gets an F for. He mismanaged the issue with the Houston Astros. He called the trophy a hunk of metal. Can you imagine the commissioner of the sport calling the one thing that they are playing for a hunk of metal? We argued about the players and the owners and the negotiation and the money for 6 weeks, and they never came to an agreement. And now, a week into it, they're not following these safety protocols. I'm sorry. If they can't get this thing figured out and if they got to cancel the season, Rob Manfred should resign from the sport because he hasn't gotten anything right.
We all got that dude in our group of friends that just, he makes the situation worse. Like, the situation's already not good, and then he just makes it worse. Like, you're riding with him and the gaslight comes on and he tells you, oh, don't worry about it. This happens all the time. We got 20 more miles. And then 10 seconds later, you're outside pushing the car. Like, the dude just makes everything worse, and it didn't start off as a good situation. That's Rob Manfred this year, because sports were in a bad situation. Society's in a bad situation. But which sport handled it the worst? Which sport sat on their hands the longest? Which sport their commissioner had the power to say, all right, children, owners and players, if we can't come to an agreement, I'm going to go ahead and decide what date and how we're going to get this done. And now it's the same guy that we find out has the power to stop the game. Yeah, I'm with you. And I actually don't think it's too harsh what you're saying, because at some point, like, you got to give guys time. For a while, Rob Manfred's been the commissioner now. How long has he been on the job? 7, 8? It's been a long time now, and there's really not one thing that I can point to. Bud Selig wasn't great. There are certain things you could say, okay, he didn't do this well, but there are also things you could point to and say he did a pretty good job with that. Interleague baseball, expanded playoffs, things like that. There's not really one thing that I can point to in the tenure so far for Rob Manfred and say, well, at least he did that.
I mean this very seriously. If I'm the players, I go to the owners, and remember, all of this whole stuff about the money came down to the CBA and that they have to negotiate a new CBA. If I'm the players, I go to them and say, we're not negotiating if Rob Manfred's in charge here. Like, what has he done that's been the best benefit of us?
Well, clearly he's made the owners money. It's the same thing that comes back to, like, Roger Goodell. The players can say what they want. The fans can say what they want. But the owners are the ones who decide the commissioner's job.
You could be the commissioner of Major League Baseball, and they would make money.
That'd be great. Are they hiring?
I know. Because I'm saying is because America likes professional sports. So I'm not saying that he's not making a money. He's obviously making them money, but the bar has to be greater than he has found ways to make us money. Roger Goodell, we were talking about a couple days ago. Say what you want about Goodell. He has done things that I can point to say that he has made the NFL a better product. I don't like Roger Goodell, but I can't say that he hasn't had any impact on the game. At some point, if you're Rob Manfred, you got to be able to hand people something. You got to be able to hand other than you make money. He made John Sherman no money. He just got here. If anything, he's cost John Sherman money over these last couple of weeks. I just don't know if the owners have that level of loyalty to him when he's mismanaged all of these things. And some of these things have not been his fault. But we know how it is. At some point, the people in charge got to answer for what's happening. They had a major cheating scandal, a major scandal. He mismanaged that about as poorly as you can mismanage it from the way he disciplined the players and his comments afterwards. The negotiations. Man, the negotiations in the NHL were not that contentious. The negotiations in the NBA, the negotiations in the NFL. It was one weekend of tweets from players, and then they came to an agreement on the deal. It doesn't have to be this contentious between the owners and the players where somebody has to step in, someone has to guide the sport in the right direction. And that person just hasn't proven to be Rob Manfred. I mean, he said that they could cancel the league as early as Monday. They couldn't get through 2 weeks of this. They couldn't get through 2 weeks, according to this. If there's more positive tests. So basically, if we get more positive tests from the Cardinals, which seem like a high likeliness, seem that a couple of people have already tested positive, it's possible they could cancel the league before they get to 2 weeks out of an 8-week season.
2 weeks. The Marlins didn't make it. The Marlins made it 4 days into the baseball season, and then they were asked to go away until we figure out a better plan. I think that the NFL, they're the ones that should really perk up their ears and eyeballs right now, because of all these other at least CDOT professional sports. So the NHL has put themselves in a bubble up in Canada, haven't heard anything about any positive test. the MLS, they're down to, what, 5-6 teams. It seems like that's going in a good direction. The NBA, albeit just started last night, but so far so good as far as the positive tests go. The only sports that I can think of, at least in America, that are operating outside of the bubble, Major League Baseball and the NFL. And I think it's pretty naive to say, well, the NFL is going to work. It's 40-something days away from that Chiefs-Texans game on Thursday night. And we're going to try to not only put that together, but we're going to have 10,000, 15,000, 20,000 additional people there that present another chance to get COVID and spread it. So I think the NFL is paying really close attention right now because as the two sports that don't have a bubble, it couldn't have gone worse for baseball the first week.
This is my question, and maybe I'm wrong here, and I understand it's sort of crying over spilled milk and we're past the point. Why couldn't Major League Baseball have gone into the bubble? Because, Rob, you watch it way more than I do. The MLS, they're in a bubble, right? The bubble isn't in Maryland. The bubble's in Florida. So there was certainly there is a league right now that has as many players as they do in Major League Baseball. Like on every soccer team, there's what, 25 people, 30 people on this team?
25 man roster, yeah.
25 people. How many people on these Major League Baseball teams? 30. Same number of coaches, same number of training staffs and all these kind of things. They're playing games. I've watched a couple of these MLS games. They're playing outdoors in Florida. It's hot during these scenarios. The MLS players seem to be getting through it and seem to be doing fine, where they struggled for a little bit, but they've gotten it. Why could baseball not have gone to a bubble and avoided this entire thing?
Where are the fields? Where are the fields? That's a problem. I don't see a place. You could say, well, what about Arizona? Because that's where they have the Cactus League. Well, it's like 124 degrees in Arizona right now. I don't think that's going to happen.
They couldn't play these games. I'm just asking.
I don't know if it could happen in Florida. To me, that's maybe the one place because we know that that's where the Grapefruit League is as far as spring training goes. Maybe they build a couple of stadiums on the fly and try to make it happen down there. It seems like if baseball could go back on this, and we know that's not how life works, but if they could jump in their hot tub time machine, they would have figured out every possible way to find a bubble. And if a bubble didn't exist, they would have done what the UFC did and build a bubble.
It just seems to me they had a choice of going into a bubble, and they opted against it.
Football's not talking. NFL's not talking about it. Have you heard any conversation about the NFL going into a bubble?
Yeah, but the NFL has twice as many people. There's three times as many people.
Same issues, though.
It seems like in this, though, they didn't want to do the bubble. Neither the owners or the players wanted to do the bubble. It's going to end up costing them money. There's no other way to look at it. I'm trying to be optimistic about baseball here, but if you're having all these, it's kind of like in a marriage. If you start having serious problems in your marriage during the honeymoon, you probably ain't lasting 20 years, bro. Like, something probably is going to go wrong in this, and you guys maybe aren't built to do this. If this is a sports league that has to get until the end of October, and they're having these issues 8 days into it, it's safe to say that you guys aren't going to reach the end of this.
Oh, my gosh. Rob, you see what's going on? Hope Harrison's dying right in front of us, right here on the radio. This is sad to watch.
They're already
it's like a
talking.
Wounded animal on the road that just got ran
I'm
over.
I'm not talking about the Royals.
Just run it over again.
The commissioner told baseball players we could cancel the league Monday. I didn't make this up.
Take that dog the out back and shoot it.
The commissioner of Major League Baseball. If you and a girl start dating and you guys are having major fights in the first 10 days, she maybe ain't the one. Like, it's possible she's not the one that you're going to settle down with. It's not like the baseball season ends in 2 weeks. If it ended in 2 weeks, you just got to hold on for a little bit longer. They have a whole nother month. So the whole month of August, they have another month after that, and then another month after that to keep playing these baseball games. What about Major League Baseball over the last 8 days would make you think that they're going to hold on for that long?
No, I think what's happened with baseball is Major League Baseball knew, because you and I, two idiots on the radio knew, we're not doctors. Took both of us a combined like 18 years to get through college. We're not the brightest stars in the sky, but we knew this was going to happen. We said baseball is going to happen, but because of the virus and lack of social distancing, that the bullpens and that traveling on airplanes and guys that are, you know, the batter only stands 2 feet ahead of the catcher. And when guys lead off on first base, they're 2 feet away from each other. If this is going to happen, and baseball knew it was going to happen, I don't think baseball ever could have imagined that it would have happened this quick. Because you're right. If they would have gotten halfway into the season and then there would have been this massive outbreak, I think they would have looked back at the first half of the season and gone, okay, we'll figure out the second half because at least we've got this in the books and it's gone pretty well. What have they got in the books? The Marlins played 4 games and they haven't played the last 4 games because half their team has COVID. It's been about as bad of a first week for baseball as it possibly could have been.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City and around the country. I can always depend on you to spot a list. NFL.com did one, and they have the Steelers having the best secondary in the NFL.
Which, if you look at their secondary, that's accurate. I mean, and they added Minkah Fitzpatrick last year. That team is absolutely stacked. My question is this. Do you guys consider the secondary for the Kansas City Chiefs a strength or a weakness? Because heading into last year, we called you corner dot, and it's all you talked about. And now you wax poetic about these guys. Tre'Davious Ward's your boy, Rashad Fenton.
I don't wax poetic.
Okay, you're not as harsh as you once were. Is that fair?
I stopped criticizing the corners. Okay. I do not wax poetic about them.
But then a guy named Tyrann Mathieu came around, and the entire city went, actually, the secondary's pretty good. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I don't think their secondary is a strength. I don't think it's a weakness. I think their secondary's strong. Like, I don't think it's an issue. To me, those are two different things. Their passing attack is a strength. I would say their pass rush at times is a strength. I don't know if I would put their secondary in a strength. I still have my questions about the corners, but I have moved on from it. I'm no longer corner dot. I'm maybe not as high on some of the safeties. Like, I'm not as high on Juan Thornhill as everybody else seems to be, but their secondary is not an issue. Their linebackers, I would consider to be a weakness.
Oh, yeah.
But I would not consider their – I don't think their secondary in their corner situation is a strength or a weakness. I just think it's fine.
My cousins used to go to Lake Minocqua every winter, and then they would play a hockey game on the ice. And somebody like me, that's just kind of a natural hypochondriac, I was always nervous. I was taught, you don't get on a frozen pond, you're going to fall through that thing. Well, then eventually I went out there and tried it, and I felt comfortable. And now I've gone back several times and played that same hockey game on that same ice. That's where I am with the secondary. Like, it felt like last year for a long time when you're counting on guys like Rashad Fenton, Tre'Davious Ward, a bunch of rookies, a bunch of guys that are on their first contract, a bunch of no-name players, that at some point the ice is going to break. Did it? Was there one game last year that you can remember an opposing wide receiver being the reason why the Chiefs lost a game? Was there one game that you can point to and say, remember when that guy just busted the Chiefs 2 years ago, the Pat MVP season when they lost in the AFC Championship game? That happened every single week. You could say that's the reason why the Chiefs didn't go on to win the Super Bowl. I'm not that concerned about the secondary because I saw a pretty big sample size all last season where it was never an issue.
I mean, I would still like to see a little bit more cornerback depth, and I don't really think that of all the places, like, so we talked about Damian Williams opting out and how they had enough bodies to fix it out. They don't have enough bodies if, let's say, Tre'Davious Ward. I don't know Tre'Davious Ward's situation, just a hypothetical. Let's say Tre'Davious Ward just had a kid. Let's say Tre'Davious Ward says, I can't play this season, I'm opting out. I don't know if they got enough corners to overcome Tre'Davious Ward not being there this season, where I would say their depth at some positions, they are at their absolute capacity of where they're going to be. That's not a scenario that they can have a significant injury to Bashaud Breeland. That's not a position on the field they can have one of their players opt out.
Outside of Patrick Mahomes, I'm trying to think, is there anybody more so than the Honey Badger that the Chiefs just absolutely have to have? And that's not saying that he's their second best player behind Patrick Mahomes, because I actually don't think that. But you just talk about the importance. Think about what the defense was, the culture, the secondary, the organization before and after the Honey Badger got there. It's probably kind of a crude thing to do to say, I'm going to pick this guy and that guy and this guy's guys that I don't want to get COVID or don't want to get hurt. But if we're doing that list, after Patrick Mahomes, you have to have a healthy Tyrann Mathieu.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Speaking of the Chiefs, one player who used to play for the Chiefs now doesn't. He has now signed a deal with Tampa Bay.
And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have been looking for a veteran presence at the running back position really for the last several weeks and months. The problem is, they just have not had a lot of money to spend. I would expect this to be somewhere around the minimum. We'll see if there are incentives or not. But this is going to be a very low-cost, low-risk addition for the Bucs. I know LeSean McCoy had some conversations with the Eagles. I talked to him a couple weeks ago. That was one big-time place where he wanted to land. But for Tom Brady and the Bucs, adding a weapon, potentially one who can help in the passing game too, is something that I know they were looking forward to. I know they wanted. The real question is, how much does he have left? This is the same LeSean McCoy that was not active for the Super Bowl. We'll see if he is able to kind of get back in gear and get one more year out of what has been an incredible, potentially Hall of Fame career.
Things were actually going pretty good for LeSean McCoy. Remember last year before he decided to put the ball on the ground. And then all of a sudden, because Andy Reid trusted him. Andy Reid, he was Andy's guy. his stops in Philly. He comes to Kansas City. A couple of guys get hurt, and he ran the ball 101 times. He was actually pretty effective. So his numbers last year in a Chiefs uniform, talking about Shady McCoy, 101 attempts, 465 yards. So that's 4.6 per carry and four touchdowns in very limited time. The problem is when he put the ball on the ground, you could argue of the four Chiefs losses, Carrington, two of them came because LeSean McCoy fumbled. That's how I'm going to remember his time in Kansas City. A guy that could have actually been a huge impact for a team that went on to win the Super Bowl if the guy just could have held on the football.
I mean, he's always been a fumble problem. The problem is when he was fumbling the football, he was running for 1,300 yards. Now when you're not going to get that usage, you're now not going to be that focal point of the offense, but you're the same fumbling machine that you've been your entire career, that's when the problem starts. It's over for LeSean McCoy. He has had, you want to talk about borderline Hall of Famers.
Very borderline.
That's where LeSean McCoy is. Now, I don't think he gets that close to it, but LeSean McCoy certainly has an argument of being in the Hall of Fame based on what he's accomplished, but it's over. At age 30, he rushed for 514 yards. Last year with Kansas City, a team who was desperate for any running game, he rushed for 465 yards and couldn't even be active. He was a healthy scratch at the end of the season. It wasn't like he was battling with injuries and they sat him out. He was perfectly fine, and Andy was like, nope, you're not playing today. You don't turn that around at age 32 as a running back and then go back to being a productive running back in the league. It's over. You had a great career. You have run for 1,000 yards six times. You led the NFL in rushing one year. You led the NFL in touchdowns. You were on the all-decade team. You won a Super Bowl ring last year. LeSean McCoy has had a great NFL career. I'm sure he has made a lot of money. But in terms of being a productive player, it's over. You know all you can provide is now veteran leadership. That's the only thing that LeSean McCoy can provide a team, veteran leadership.
Yeah, after Adrian Peterson, when you talk about best running backs of the generation, there's kind of a handful of guys that are either going to make the Hall of Fame or borderline. That's the Marshawn Lynch's, Shady McCoy, Jamal Charles, Frank Gore, Rob's guy comes to that conversation. But I am thinking about the Tampa Bay Bucks offense. It's like the senior tour all of a sudden. Like, let's say LeSean McCoy sneaks his way into the Hall of Fame, and Tom Brady's the first, he's the ultimate first ballot Hall of Famer. So is Gronk. I don't know if Mike Evans has done enough to be in the conversation just yet, but you're talking about an offense that's got three or four guys. This is where we vary. Like, I don't know if the Bucs are going to be that good of a football team this year, but I do think they're going to put up some points with or without LeSean McCoy.
No, they're definitely going to be able to score. I mean, There's enough weapons on that team that that's a team that should be able to score points. I just don't really think they're going to be that good at quarterback. Let's play a game real quick. Rob, hit the music. Oh, Rob, put a finger up.
Which finger was it?
The first one.
That's all right then.
All right, LeSean McCoy has played in 11 seasons in his NFL career. How much money has he made?
LeSean McCoy, he's done really nice for himself. Over those 11 years, LeSean McCoy
has... You're really bad at guessing how much people have made in the NFL.
He's made $44 million.
Oh, that's way over that. I'm going to say he's at like $75
million. $62 million for LeSean McCoy.
He's done very nice for himself. It's over, sir.
He had one year where he made $16 million for the Buffalo Bills in 2015.
Yeah, but that was right before the running back position started to lose its value by and large, because that was right before Todd Gurley signed his contract. And I think that that's going to be a shadow for running backs going forward, because the Rams essentially screwed themselves when they decided to cut that contract to Todd Gurley and give him all that money. Every single time a running back's name has come up since then, they always go back to, well, that really screwed the Rams franchise for years to come. I don't think we're ever going to see another $16, $20, $22 million year contract. There's
we just
Ezekiel
saw Christian McCaffrey get paid.
Christian McCaffrey, every now and again, there's like two of those guys that come along.
Barkley's going to get paid.
Yeah, let's see. We'll see.
Saquon Barkley's getting paid.
We'll see.
You don't draft a running back number two overall. He play like that, and then when it comes time to pay, I'm like, no, hold on. We don't value the position. Saquon Barkley's going to get paid when it's time to get paid.
The same team that just paid Odell Beckham 2 years ago, and who does he play for now?
The Browns.
So, yeah. I mean, cautionary tale.
He still got his money. I mean, I hear what you're saying is they paid Odell Beckham. They then traded that contract. Another team picked it up. But yes, Saquon Barkley, when it's time to get paid, he is going to get paid.
And again, that still proves my point. There's like three running backs that are going to break the bank. If you're not one of those guys, you're everybody. Look at Derrick Henry, the deal.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.